Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's happening, Rush Nation? It's Monday. Man, oh man, what a weekend we've had here in Great Britain. We are almost at the final point of COVID restrictions being lifted. So much is going on today. If you're watching on video, you saw the playbook video before we got on. If you're not, and this is an audio, if you are watching on video, you also know who today's guest is. But if this is an audio only for you, don't forget to head over to 5yardrush.co.uk, grab your PDF version of the Fantasy Football Playbook 2021 edition, but it's also now on Amazon. So if you do want a paperback, head over to Amazon, find yourself the 2021 Playbook and get it in your basket. Get it primed to you, get it tomorrow. Happy days. Big man, how you doing, fella?
Hey, happy days to my fellow best-selling number one American football book on Amazon UK right now, the Fantasy Football Playbook offer. So cheers to you, big man. You got your water. I've got my tea because it's still softer stuff, but massively humbled, and the book dropped on Friday and it went straight into number one at Amazon. It's a real humbling experience, and we've got a fellow author here who's killing it in terms of his book as well. I can't wait to get to, but momentous day with the lockdown lifting, not quite out of the woods yet, but it's just it's been a heck of a week, man, not just with the book launching, but wonderful interaction on Twitter with people. And yeah, it's been awesome. Like, just thank you to everyone who's bought the book. Like, honestly, from the bottom of my heart, it means the world. And if you haven't bought it yet and waiting for payday, then jump on and enjoy it. And reach out when you do. Ask questions. We'll set up some leagues. We'll have some fun.
Absolutely. And before, if you are watching live, we would like a huge favor. Head over to Ball Blast's current poll on Twitter. They're running a Twitter about fellow people in the industry, and our boy Rich is in the semi-finals, and there's only a couple of hours, if not an hour, to go. So if you could vote for Rich to get to the final, we would be hugely appreciative, Rush Nation. But Murph alluded to it a minute ago, we are joined by fellow author. He is the author of the analytics of Dynasty, contributor at the Football Guys, and host of the Analytics of Dynasty podcast. It's Jordan McNamara. Jordan, welcome back, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. Congratulations on the book launch. It's nice, and I'm glad you guys are sort of getting out of the lockdown mode over there. It's a good week here, so it's glad to be with you guys.
Oh, it's good to have you. It's been a while, too long since we had you on, and we were talking a little bit off air, but tell us a little bit about what's been going on with you since you were last on January last year.
Yeah, you know, just I got the release of the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition. This is the 3.0 version. So each one of them's a little different in terms of what they focus on. There's not really a ton of overlap. They build on each other to some degree, but I don't do it like a college textbook type deal. It's not, you just, you know, recycle content and slap a new number on it and you know, call it another edition. It's whole new research, whole new topics and all that sort of thing. So lots of that stuff, you know, and then I have my subscription over there at analyticsofdynasty.com. I do Dynasty Daily Podcasts. We've got a Dynasty Trade Finder, Dynasty Real Draft Position Tracker, which tracks real drafts, startup drafts, rookie drafts, tells you where players are actually going. You see player movements going on all the time, you know, to watch Deshaun Watson's player movement, you know, and the trades associated with him over the past 6 weeks, 2 months that we've had this thing up and going. It's been very illuminating in terms of value and all of those things. So it's been a really good, really good start to the year, and all that stuff's going on, and it's just good to be on with you guys.
It's so good to have you back. Thoroughly enjoyed our show last time. And we were really unfortunate when lockdown sort of happened and we went into the season. Everyone's schedules, like our schedule got massively messed up. We haven't recorded together since in person, although we have seen each other. And we didn't really have as many guests on as we liked. So we're getting through to people now. It's so good to have you back. And, you know, the new book's phenomenal. Tell us what's different. I know we talked about the 2.0 last time you were on, which was amazing. I think it was about the time of launch. Talk to us about 3.0, because you've also got a couple of guests contributors. I know our fellow, well, expat, I guess he's no longer British. He's American in my eye. Peter Howdy. He's American now. He might sound a bit British, but he's American. I know he contributed a bit. What's new in the book for 2021 for our listeners?
Yeah. So the big thing with this is, you know, the addition of contributors. And I thought a while about, you know, what I want the Analytics of Dynasty to be. When I wrote the first one, I just wanted it to be a dynasty book, right? I didn't really have, you know, just something that somewhat you could buy and forever use. So that's kind of the angle with it. It has always been a evergreen type of thing, right? It's not, you know, pick Will Fuller this year at this price type of thing. It's, hey, here's a successful profile that's, you know, and here's the sort of price you go for, and this is kind of what you look for. And so it's more strategic than it is tactical in any sense. So I've been, you know, and then I did 2.0, and I've tried to think about, you know, what I want the Analytics of Dynasty to be. And I want it to be strategic, and I want it to have different ideas that sort of push the envelope and progress our thinking forward in terms of positions, how we think about players, how we think about strategic decision-making, all that stuff. So I decided to incorporate some contributors. Chad Parsons, my co-host at Football Guys, contributed something on roster retention rate, which I wouldn't have set out to do what he did, but what he did basically confirms everything I sort of suspected about how long players are on our roster, which is really interesting, and people way overestimate the longevity of players. So that was interesting. Peter Howard did something really fascinating on basically rookie metrics. So he went through basically all the metrics that really matter for rookies and put it all in one place, which is something that I always thought needed to be done. There's so many stats, breakout age, dominator rating, all these things. There's never been like a glossary of it or kind of like an overview of the entire topic. There's a lot of ad hoc pieces. And so I have always been really interested in like, let's make that a strategic thing. So he contributed that. And then something that was really fascinating to me and a lot of people had asked about was tight end premium. And, you know, when you start two tight ends or when you mess around the PPR scoring or something like that, how does that affect the positions? And Scott Connor of the Dynasty and Chill podcast, he did a whole chapter on that, which was really interesting. It sort of shows how the rates move around a little bit in terms of, you know, how often you should start them based on the format and the scoring. It's a really interesting thing. And there's more that goes into it than just jacking the PPR scoring either up or down. It's a really, really interesting read, and I've been able to incorporate it in some key places. So that's all the contributors. And then I did my normal thing, you know, a lot of looking at profiles, you know, a lot of looking, how to identify really successful profiles. You know, two guys that I love this year based on some of my profile research is Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Josh Jacobs. Like, they're elite profiles trading at not elite costs. And that's like a smash situation. And so I did a lot of that stuff, rookie drafts, some different strategies in rookie drafts. Thinking about one thing I really liked this year too, was I did a whole piece on just strategy in terms of taking stuff from outside of dynasty fantasy football and applying it to dynasty fantasy football, thinking about, you know, the decisions that we make. I stole the idea of a book called 10-10-10 by a woman by the name of Susie Welch. And I transformed it into 2-2-2. So you think about your decisions in 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years time frame, short, medium, and long term. Sort of look back at your decisions sort of through that lens and how you're going to try and impact your team. A lot of that stuff has really been helpful in terms of shaping the way I think about the process of playing Dynasty. And I think it's been pretty successful for the readers as well.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's fascinating. And I encourage anyone who's listening now who's joined us on the journey since you were last on to go back and listen to the first podcast that you were on back. It was January 2020, because it's quite timeless. We didn't get into too many player profiles. We talked a lot more about the general concepts of dynasty football, some strategy around it, for all different scenarios, for like win now, etc. And it's timeless. And I strongly urge, in fact, I'm going to retweet the link out after this is aired for people to go and download, because it was fascinating and a really good discussion. And I think what I love about the Analytics of Dynasty is because it's not, as you say, it's not a year-to-year guide. It's not something that you read it, and it's done. It's like, great, next year it's going to be completely different. It's just going to give me the latest players to draft. It's strategically there to make you a better player, to improve your decision-making process. And you can go back and read last year's version or 2 years ago version and go and learn things that maybe you didn't either understand or you didn't grasp or you didn't wasn't as applicable to you in that situation. If you had a load of new drafts and new start of drafts and now you're 2-3 years in, that stuff's more applicable. And I think that's what I really love about it is each edition is not just a yearly guide. It's a development. It's like a college course. I think you put it right. It's like just every year it's how do you expand and get better. And I love it. Where can people go and buy the book and where can people sort of get involved? Because you have a great community as well. Where can people get involved in that?
Yeah, you can go to analyticsofdynasty.com. And I sell the book right there. I actually have, I think that the Analytics of Dynasty is best consumed in two parts, basically. So I have the 2021 edition. Again, it's really tough. The toughest part of, and you guys probably experience this to some degree too. If you explore an idea in a past book, I think I'm doing a disservice to my yearly subscribers to just write it again. But so much of what happened, you know, so much of what I think builds off of what I've learned in the past, right? So much of the 2021 edition, not all of it, but a lot of it is branching off of ideas, right? If the 2020 edition is sort of the tree, 2021, there's a lot of branches from the 2020 edition that I explore in 2021. There's a lot of different stuff too, but there's some key things. So it's a balance between, you know, rewriting what I wrote in 2020 to expand on, you know, to expand 10 pages on it, you know, it becomes a little arduous and I don't want to sort of shortchange the subscriber either. So I think the best way to consume the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition is to do them both. It's to read 2020. Again, it's all evergreen. Read 2020 and then read 2021. So I have a bundle up on the website. You can do that, analyticsofdynasty.com. Right in the shop, and you can get the bundle, start with 2020 and then build on 2021. Cause a lot of it is, there's a lot of things in that 2020 edition that are so foundational that I think you're at a disservice if you read the 2021 edition without that. So, that would be the way that I would suggest to consume it. So I got a bundle there. And it's cheaper than it would be for the individual books. It's $50 for both of them. And again, if you're playing Dynasty, right, it's worth the investment, I think. And then I also have a subscription service. So I release a podcast every day, and I've released a podcast every day since, well, it actually started during COVID last year. And then I sort of stopped in like July, but now I sort of relaunched. That was on Patreon. I relaunched it as analyticsdynasty.com, and I've released a podcast every day since. It's between Christmas and New Year's, and I'll do it probably all the way, at least up until the start of the NFL season. I got to sort of see how the NFL season schedule is going to work and sort of what I can do. But I think I'm just going to do it every day. It makes no sense to stop now. So I do all that. And then I have a Patreon, or I have a subscriber group me chat, which is great. Lots of ideas in there, constant drafts going on, which is fantastic because you're constantly getting ideas and new idea, getting basically reps, you know, getting team building reps going on, which is great. I got my Dynasty tiers and all the Trade Finder stuff and everything as well. So yeah, you can find that all at analyticsofdynasty.com. And if you subscribe to the website, you get a free copy of the 2021 edition.
We'll put links in the show notes. People, honestly, we get a lot of people on and you know, we only really get people on whose work we consume ourselves. Because we believe in it, you know, it'd be so easy to just, you know, bring anybody on to push stuff, but you know, genuinely it's made me a better Dynasty player. And I'm certainly, as a result of reading it, a far more aggressive Dynasty player. Mm-hmm. I feel like at times I was quite, I don't say conservative, because I kind of now know what I'm very much I like to win now. Mm-hmm. But I think what the books help me with is after you go through that initial win now, whether you win or you don't win, how can you reload quickly, mm-hmm, with value? Mm-hmm. How do you reload? So you almost you know, if we're looking at a real world scenario, what the Buccaneers did, mm-hmm. they were a team that kind of pushed the chips in, didn't work, very spectacularly fell off, load of investment in free agency, couldn't even get in the playoffs. And then over the course of a year or two, how did they build to contend with without really mortgaging the entire future? And that's what I like about the book, is it gave me a lot more, because I find rebuilds, like a strong like 3-4 year project, really difficult. There are people out there that love it, and hats off to you, but I like to win. And I think what the book does, it gives you ways to be competitive. Maybe you're not going to win the title, but maybe you can get yourself into the playoffs and have a competitive season just by making some small tweaks to your strategy and all round play.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I, you know, one of the things I the Analytics of Dynasty writing process has really guided me in terms of specific situations, which I didn't know when I wrote, but I wrote in a way that I had done research that allowed me to, in the moment, understand exactly what's happening and understand exactly what it's worth. And a classic example of that is Deshaun Watson, right? How do you deal with the risk that is Deshaun Watson? First, you have to identify what the risk is, and then you've got to identify what it's worth. You know, how much should that discount you? You know, I'm seeing him go, you know, fourth, fifth round in some drafts. And just to give you an idea, when you're sort of looking at, you know, in that range of drafts, you're looking at, you know, what's the odds that you get two top 12 seasonal finishes out of a quarterback in that range? You're probably looking somewhere in the, you know, 50-60% range, right? That, and that's probably a little generous. If Watson misses a year, right, if that's sort of what the risk you sort of attribute to a guy like Deshaun Watson is, well, what's the odds that he's going to outproduce in 3 years what the cost of, or, you know, the quarterback that you would be getting in the fourth round, historically, he's going to crush that, right? He's going to crush that historically. He's one of those ones for me that in a pre-analytics of dynasty world, I wouldn't have known what to do with. But when you sort of gauge, hey, listen, I'm trading a mid to later first round rookie pick, or I'm sort of treating him as a fourth or fifth round startup pick, I understand, and I think my readers understand now what that means in terms of, you know, the odds of hitting in that range, you know, the odds of a significant difference maker in that range, especially at the rookie pick cost. I mean, you might be getting like 30-40%, something like that, in terms of guys making a true big time difference. And you're going to get a guy who's on a Hall of Fame track, and basically the cost is you're going to, you know, you think maybe you lose a year. Right, that's kind of what the tax that I'm putting on Deshaun Watson right now is. That's a smash situation, right? And that's embracing, that's not being afraid to lose, that's trying to win, right? And I think that's the thing that with the analytics of dynasty, it's really been able to sort of contextualize the decisions that we're thinking about, and something that you know, when as we sort of look forward, all these situations present themselves. Tyreek Hill, for example, you know, how do you deal with a guy like Josh Jacobs who's falling in price, and it makes virtually zero sense in terms of, from a profile, just take the name out of it for a second, just from a profile perspective, how do you sort of deal with that? And, you know, how do you sort of compare him to other guys? You know, how do you compare a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the incoming rookies? You know, how do you sort of do all those things? And that's all stuff that's there, right, in the analytics of dynasty. And those are things that I sort of look at and can tell you, you know, hey, this is kind of what historically this decision has been worth to you, and this is the edge that you have. And it's very helpful in terms of when all the bullets are flying and in season to be able to adjust to that, or when they're moving quick in a Deshaun Watson like situation, right? You kind of need to know what it's worth and what the risk is, and then what you're paying, what the risk is on what you're paying, because people way underestimate the risk on what the rookie picks and some of the existing startup picks and all that stuff. People way underestimate those risks, and, you know, probably overestimating the risk to Deshaun Watson ultimately. So those situations, sort of when you frame it like that, I think it's really helpful.
See, The Sean Watson thing is something I've been thinking about a lot over the past week, and I've been watching different drafts, different moves, where he's going, etc. Right, and I'm doing some redraft best balls. I'm doing some redraft analyst views and current trends, and I'm tracking where he's going. Right, and redraft, they get it. Right, redraft, he's going 10th round now. Fine, I get that, because he could miss 8 games, he could miss the season. Like, I get it. But in Dynasty, the one thing that's made me fascinated about Deshaun Watson, and this is something that I think is kind of between the lines. I play in a lot of leagues with people in the UK, and I play a lot of the leagues with people in the US. The people in the US are quite happy to deal him. They're quite happy to deal him. I feel like you can have a conversation about Deshaun Watson, about cost and value. You might not always get him, but there's a conversation, and the bigger, and you know that you can go back to that conversation. You know that as soon as the news comes down, you can reopen the talks, and you can go and get a deal done. Mm-hmm. Whether you do it now, whether you do it 3 months from now, ultimately for 2021, it doesn't matter when you do the deal for Deshaun Watson. It's not really going to matter. You're going to get it done at some point if you're desperate enough, or you see the value enough and can find the right price. In the UK, in UK players in general, and I'm speaking very generally, I don't want people to at me and say that I'm not like that. I appreciate it. The market to get Deshaun Watson is virtually nil.
Interesting.
It is very, very, very difficult because, and the thing I've noticed between the different countries when I play, in the UK, people are absolutely adamant not to lose an asset. The fear of missing out, the fear of selling something that goes on to be great, is far greater than the opportunity cost to try and acquire something else or to acquire something in the short term. And that culture, it's like a cultural thing.
Yeah.
UK players do not want to let go of an asset because they'll rather take the knee for the year and say, all right, he goes out for a year.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
I'll take the hit.
Yeah.
I'll take the hit. I'll swallow it because I'm not going to sell him to you because next year you're going to have him and he's going to be great.
Right.
Whereas I feel in America, or American players are quite happy to deal him at a price if they can see the opportunity to win now and they can get the pieces or the surrounding people. And then also, I think there's a belief element with certain players that they don't want this bad behavior on their team. We've seen it with Tyreek Hill. I saw people dump Tyreek Hill for a very, very small amount because it was, I don't want to, whatever he was accused of, I know I'm just not going to verbalize it. I don't want that behavior associated with my team. And there was a real sort of moralistic view. I don't know. What we, have you play with people all over the world. Do you think that? Because that's the feeling I get, is that I feel like in America I can acquire or get on the path to acquiring Watson. But over here, no chance.
It's a really interesting cultural phenomenon. It's probably some of the worst American traits coming out in us in terms of the lack of patience and all of that stuff, right? Refusal to play the long game, right? That's there's a cultural difference between what we're doing and what you guys are doing.
I would say in reverse to that, I would say we're Brits. We're just too stubborn to let the other guy win.
Okay.
No. It's more like, no, I'm not going to give you something that's going to help you win the championship next year. I just flat out refuse.
Yeah,
I would rather lose if it meant you lost.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's a stubbornness.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I was going to take the stereotypical American anti-American view on it. I think that. So in my day job, I used to do these types of cases. In terms of, I did some of them civilly, and I was a former prosecutor. I am a prosecutor now. I don't do those cases anymore. And I'm just speaking for me in this, not anyone else that employs me. But I have been guided by this process of, hey, I think that there's a reasonable chance that they're going to resolve this thing. In the sense of, I think there's going to be probably a settlement at some point. And I think that, you know, if I was representing Deshaun Watson, my goal would be, we're going to limit our damage and we've got a lot of money to do it with. Right. And so what are we trying to limit? Well, we're trying not to go to prison, right? And we're trying to protect our long-term longevity. So that's kind of how I came to the year calculus. Like if you got to sacrifice a year to do, you know, to play 10, right? That's worth it in terms of just the pure finances of it. But I think that there's a way that he cannot miss any time. And I think that that's happening behind the scenes. It looks like there's some, you know, flirtation about them potentially settling this. Flirtation is probably the wrong word. You know, that there's some negotiations, there's some smoke there to that fire. And you know, I think that makes a lot of sense for him. And I think that he can do that in a way that probably protects him from getting suspended. So we'll see. You know, that's the thing with me. Like, again, what impacts your team more? It's upside, right? Like to, and I talked about this in a prior edition, edition of the Analytics Dynasty, but you got to think in an 8% type way, right? To win, you need to be in the top 8%, right? You need to finish typically one out of 12 is your typical dynasty league. How do you do that? Well, you have to take calculated high upside bets, right? It's not just playing willy nilly, but it is playing dynasty in a way that takes an asset that, and you need assets that have asymmetric risk, right? That the downside isn't that great, but the upside is enormous. And he's the type of player that when you sort of do the math on him, he can win you two games, right? That turns a 7-win team, a 7-6 win team. You know, we'll have to redo the math on that. 7-7 now, I guess, with the 17 game or the 18 game schedule or whatever. And I got to rework my math on some of these wins over replacement stuff. But he's the type of guy that can shift a couple of wins for you, and that's a big deal. That is an enormous. There's not many people that do that. He's the type that can for a decade, and like that's worth a lot. And if I'm paying, you know, I traded 106 straight up for him and actually a two quarterback league, and I don't necessarily need him, but he's going,
why wouldn't you?
He's going to, right. I mean, and here's the thing. Like if it settles, which I think is going to happen, he's going to go up in price. And so I am basically making a bet on, you know, kind of, I've got a lot of outs. And if you're thinking in like a poker sense, I got a ton of outs, but I have a near term out and I've got a long term out, which long term it works out. Near term, like, you know, if it settles on Thursday, his price is going to go up two rounds. Almost overnight, his price is going to go up two rounds. And that's something that I really think, like, that's the types of bets that can make a massive difference. That's a huge difference. You know, the person that I did the trade with, he said, you know, listen, I just need a quarterback this year. And he took Justin Fields. Which that's great. Like I like Justin Fields and I'm a fan of Justin Fields, but he like, and I think he was the best player in the draft over Trevor Lawrence. But all of that said, there's a huge difference between being running, you know, rookie one, rookie two, rookie three, wherever you put Fields and a guy that's on a Hall of Fame track to start his career. That's just, you know, a continental divide level of difference in terms of players. You know, we're reaching all the way across the ocean, like this show. It's just such a big difference. So for me, like that's just a clear, I mean, that's a massive upside bet and at a cost that's not that high.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think if you, any first, even the 101, mm-hmm. I would do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even hesitate because I'm with you. I'm reading between the tea leaves. I'm not quite as bullish as you. I do think he gets a suspension, mm-hmm. but I think it's a prearranged suspension, similar to what happened to Jameis Winston, where there was clear discussion that he would come out, he'll make a statement, he won't appeal the suspension. It'll be something, it will have to be more than what Jameis got, which was 3, but I can't see it being 6. Mm-hmm. I think the number's going to land at like 4. If they can settle the cases. So yeah. And that's it. Yeah. If they can settle the cases, I can see a path to him getting a 4-game ban at the start of the season. And then he's back for 13 games.
Right.
And then what? Like what's 4 games at the start of the season for the Texans? It's
right.
It's meh.
We've seen that with Brady, right? We've seen that. And I actually think I'd even go more bullish. And the reason why I actually think that there's a chance that he gets no suspension, is because if he settles it in a way that sort of agrees to not disclose anything, right? They do a non-disclosure agreement. They're kind of common in these scenarios. The NFL has no basis to suspend him, I don't think, right? Because they're probably not interviewing, they're not able to interview all the women and all that stuff. So I think that there's that option. The other thing too is, you know, as a general rule, if he violates the personal conduct policy, it's a 6-game suspension, and you can sort of move it up or down from there. You know, if he violates, let me take that back for a second. If he violates it in this specific way, so there's some specific ways you can violate the personal conduct policy in a sexual assault, or, you know, this type of case would fall under the, it'd be a 6-game threshold. That would be the threshold suspension. And then you can move it up or down. You know, a lot of times it'll get moved down. The person takes responsibility, you know, all those things. There's some upside risk too, which is sort of why I calculate a year, because there's a lot of people, right? So you sort of, there's a lot of things going on here, but the thing with all of these is, like, we've never really seen a guy that's like played been just absolutely suspended out of the league. Ray Rice, but he was sort of getting to the end. But like Kareem Hunt, that happened on video. Like Joe Mixon, that happened on video. Darius Geis had some other stuff going on, so I'm not necessarily sure that he's one. But I mean, Zeke had this suspension. Heck, Brady with the Deflategate stuff. Roethlisberger going back. I mean, hell, Mike Vick went to prison, right? I mean, you know, Plexico Burress went to prison. These guys all came back. And there's only, at any given time, there's like 20 guys that can be franchise quarterbacks that are eligible to, you know, that are walking the face of the earth and eligible to play. And he's one of them. And he's probably going to be one of them for a while. And so, you know, that's just the brass tacks of it all, is I think that that's sort of that situation. Again, it's all about the bets you want to make, right? I am in a, let's take a huge upside swing, because I don't think the risk is that much when with the cost you're paying. And anytime I can do that, like, I think basically my entire dynasty strategy has warped into trying to find those shots, right? Like trying to make those bets. And so that's across, right? He's just happens to be the one that I'm doing that today with, or, you know, this week or this month or this year. But tomorrow it could be another situation. You know, in my rookie drafts, like, I'm constantly hunting the guy that can tilt the league. You know, how many guys are there in this class that can tilt the league that aren't a quarterback? You know, I think there's probably 6 of them. And outside of that, they're not expendables is a wrong word probably, but they're not huge difference makers, right? How many of the difference makers can you truly get?
Yeah, Antonio Brown's another one, because Antonio Brown, everyone's worried about what's going on with Antonio Brown now with, oh, this civil suit's come out. Here we go. It's Antonio Brown again. The difference is he's already served the suspension for this suit. He served it in the last suspension that he got. It was included in that. It was a legal case. The legal case got resolved. Right. This is a civil suit, and Antonio Brown is going to have to write a check between $30,000 and $39,000. At some point, that's going to get paid. Doesn't matter. But he's already served the suspension for this. So you can go and tap on a player. If you're desperate for like a wide receiver 3 upside play that you can acquire for like a 5th round rookie pick, Antonio Brown is it. Like, it's a much smaller scale, but you can buy Antonio Brown pretty cheap now from players, because they think, oh, AB's going to go off the rails and he's going to get suspended again, because they haven't researched it. And actually, he's already served the suspension for this one. He can't get resuspended for it. So it's another player. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
So you mentioned 6 of the rookies in this class, Jordan. Let's talk about some rookies in these rookie drafts.
Yeah.
Obviously, rookie drafts, it's the time of year. People have got rookie draft fever. I was in more than I could count on Saturday, and I'm sat there thinking, crikey, like, the rest of the offseason is still yet to come. Why do we have to pound these rookie drafts a week after the NFL was drafted late? No one's moving. Nothing's going to happen next week or the week after. But obviously, it is that time, and they want to line up their shiny new toys after drafting them. What's been your interest in dynasty startups and rookie drafts from your perception in 2021? Because obviously we had the 2020 COVID lockdown draft situation where everyone was just drafting out of pure boredom and got into way too many teams. Have you seen a change in that in 2021, or do you think it's the same again because of where we still are sort of?
That's a good question. I think people are doing less startup drafts. Just my, you know, I've seen a fair amount of them, but I mean, I just know I'm doing less, as there's other reasons for that. But, I think based on, you know, my subscriber chats, I think it's probably down. But I don't, it hasn't fallen through the floor, you know, and I don't, and maybe I have a different level of subscriber probably, but I don't think that, you know, they probably don't accurately reflect, you know, the average in terms of, you know, just people that aren't subscribing places. They have a different connection to their teams, I think, than people that subscribe, you know, and pay services and consume daily content and all that stuff. So it's tough to say generally from what they do, but I think that, you know, I've noticed that there's been, you know, a fair amount of it. I think it's down from last year, but, you know, it's interesting, right? And I think that this is a time of year that you got to think big picture. And this is a good time of year to get into analytics of Dynasty, right? Because you're thinking bigger picture. We're thinking about, you know, moving different, we're thinking about players as assets, to use something we talked about earlier, you know, and trying to, you know, identifying those opportunities to move between players, right? And that's something that I spent a lot of time doing, pivoting off guys. You know, in the rookie draft market, it's really interesting. You know, I think maybe the most interesting, you know, if you're just looking at super flex drafts, I think the most interesting situation is Travis Etienne, because you have Najee Harris and him being first round running backs, and those are historically the best bets in Dynasty in terms of rookies coming in as first round rookie running backs. And you sort of look at them and you say, okay, they went pretty close to each other. I don't think there's a major difference in terms of their profiles. They look a little bit different when they play, but you know, they're both pretty good profiles. Neither of them, it wasn't a shock that either of them went there. And yet Najee Harris is going in the mid third rounds of startup drafts and Etienne's going in the fifth. Etienne looks a lot more like Javonte Williams in terms of their cost, right? I think the last I checked, and we track it over at the site, the last I checked, it's Travis Etienne's going like 504, Javonte Williams is going 510, and Najee Harris is going like 304. So it's a two round gap between Najee Harris and Travis Etienne, yet it's a six pick gap or so between Etienne and Williams, right? That's, to me, that's way too much of a gap, right? You're treating that those two first round guys way too differently. So Etienne's and that's showing up in some of these and some of the rookie drafts as well. I mean, depending on sort of the format and everything, you're seeing Harris go 3, 4, 5 picks in super flex drafts ahead of Etienne. You know, you're seeing Jamar Chase jump ahead of Etienne at points. You're seeing Pitts jump ahead of Etienne at points. And you know, so you're getting a gap between Etienne and Harris. I think that's a really interesting thing. You know, this, again, the analytics of Dynasty, a lot of it's about patterns and recognizing patterns. There was a big pattern last year, which was something that my research for the 2021 edition kind of like in bright glaring red lights showed that I didn't know, I didn't perceive the impact of until after rookie draft season last year, which was when you look at top 10 quarterbacks, they perform largely random. And so what that means is we're not, the order in which they go off in rookie drafts hasn't been predictive of how well they've done. So if we've gone early on guys in rookie drafts, hasn't been within that group of top 10 guys, they haven't performed better than the guys that were later on, right? That we drafted later on as top 10 guys. I think that's pretty significant. The other thing too is the NFL draft order of those top 10 quarterbacks hasn't shown to be statistically significant about predicting success just within that group. So one hasn't historically, or two hasn't historically been better than 9 or 10, right? They've been performed largely random. When you see those things, right? That's Justin Herbert, right? That's Justin Herbert. That's Josh Allen from a couple of years ago, right? Those, when those gaps open up, and there was huge gaps between Herbert and Tua, for example. I mean, there was 4, 5, 6 rounds in a startup draft market last summer. It was just an enormous gap. And you have to close that down. Like, you can't let that get, you have to jump in and stop that, because you can't treat those, right? That's a clear indication that that's a buy, on the guy that's going way later. So for me, that's kind of, that's just reappearing right now with Etienne, right? That's reappearing with Etienne. The other thing too, is as I look at it, I'm not a huge fan of Kadarius Toney, but when you sort of look at his profile, I mean, there's a round gap in some spots between him and Jalen Waddle, between him and Devonta Smith. And when you sort of look at their profiles, like, it's not anything that's glaringly better between Waddle and Toney, or glaringly better between Devonta Smith and Toney. And there's a round gap in rookie drafts, right? That's something that, again, I'm not a huge Kadarius Toney guy, but at the cost, it's to me is an interesting bet. You're talking like late second round of super flex drafts. You're talking, you know, I guess early to mid second round of start one drafts. Like, those are really interesting situations.
So I just did a Superflex draft for one of my home dynasty leagues, and it's 12 teams, start three running backs. So, and it's Superflex, and the quarterbacks are spread really thin across the league, and the running backs are even thinner because it is start three. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence went number one, but then Kyle Pitts went number two. And then I thought we'd see the quarterbacks back in play, but Najee Harris went three. I was at four. I don't need a quarterback. I do need a running back. And I thought maybe there's a chance that Carter or Sermon will be there early at second. So I took Chase because my wide receiver core was poor. And then Waddle, Smith, Williams went, and it's super flex. And the quarterbacks were still there at the end of the first. And then Travis Etienne ended up going 12th. I did absolutely everything I could to try and trade back into the end of the first to get Etienne at that cost, because I thought that's pure value right there. But yeah, Nobody bit on my poisoned apple, as it were. But yeah, just seeing where Pitts went at two, and then to see the quarterbacks fall in a league where it's super flex and quarterbacks are needy, is blew my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's so silly. And
the interesting thing about Pitts is, like, I think there's two guys in this class that I just look at and you're like, it's really tough to do that historically. Like, Lawrence is a first round startup pick. I just can't get that's expecting a lot. That's expecting a real lot. And people think that he's this sure thing. A couple of years ago, after Baker Mayfield's rookie season, Baker Mayfield was going quarterback four, quarterback three. He went at the end, the very, very end of that offseason, he was sneaking into quarterback two range. And it was later in the draft because quarterbacks were going later, right? So he was more like a third round startup, second, maybe third round startup pick. But he was going, relative to the position, way more expensive than Lawrence is, right? When you sort of, you know, there's a difference between four or three and two and like eight or nine where Lawrence is going right now. But people are making this argument like, hey, this is a really safe bet. I'm like, is it? Because again, the first round quarterbacks perform largely random. I think there's plenty of, I'm not going to say that there's huge holes in Trevor Lawrence's game, but I could sort of poke him, right? I think that there's massive questions about how a guy that, basically through RPOs at an extraordinary rate, you're looking at when you go back and look at it, he had amongst the PFF has a grade of basically breaks passing down into quick passes and sort of longer passes, or quick drop backs and long drop backs. And they use 2.5 seconds. Trevor Lawrence has like the top 10 percentile in terms of percentage of his passes that were 2.5 seconds or less of a drop back. And if you look at those guys, it hasn't been a lot of success. Again, does the game look a little bit different now? Yeah, probably. But That's a really interesting dilemma, because that's probably not what he's going to do. And there's questions about, I just question sort of the elite upside of him too. You know, people, when you look at his stats, he's very good, but if you're hunting elite upside, there's other guys in this class that have it better than he does. There's multiple guys in this class that have better seasons. Justin Fields has a better profile than Trevor Lawrence on paper. No, undoubtedly. I don't know why he fell. We could sort of debate that, I'm sure. Speaking of cultural debates, that's probably a show for another day. But yeah, I mean, all of those things are really interesting. So he's one that's going way too expensive. The other one's Pitts, right? If you, I understand why you would do it. Like, I understand why. And I, there's a tight end premium league that I had that I took him. You know, I had some multiple picks up there in like the top, I think I had three top six picks. So I took him up there just because I sort of knew that that would protect what I wanted to get later on. You know, I wanted a potential shot at Harris. And I knew if I went Harris first, I wasn't going to get Pitts at that, you know, a few picks later. But if I went Pitts early, I could get, I had a shot at getting Harris a little bit later. But he's going tight end two and startup drafts. I mean, that's just, and you look at the guys that we've gone really early on at tight end, right? You look at the guys that have basically been first round rookie picks in terms of going back historically, they have not been good. They have not performed. They have not been elite, I should say. It's been, you know, OJ Howard was in there, Kobe Fleener, Tyler Eifert. I mean, stop me when you hear a big time difference maker, because I'm going to be going for a while and there's not any. You know, that those types of guys have gone really early. And, you know, that's, now we're going to make Pitts the most expensive one ever. I just don't typically like doing the most expensive ever. It's just not usually how I like to build. So I've been trying to pivot where I could. But those are the two guys that, to me, it's really interesting in terms of when you stack them up historically, they're glaring sirens of danger.
So with Pitts going so early, obviously tight end premium changes that significantly because of his upside of, from what we've seen in college. With tight end premium, do you think that boosts Pat Freiermuth into round one conversation in tight end premium?
I haven't seen him going there. So I haven't seen him going there. And we track tight end premium. That's our basically default setting in terms of drafts that we track. So we track Superflex tight end premium. I haven't seen him going there, but I do think like he's, and I did this last year with Cole Kmet. Basically, you get a kind of a round two tight end that tends to fall into the second round. You know, at times you can get Kmet in the third round of rookie drafts. Like that's a smash. You just take that and you just move on, right? And you, that's how you kind of build depth at the position. And it's at a discount to me. So I have been in on him in that range of like the later second round. I think that's totally appropriate for Freiermuth. I haven't seen him jump up in the first and very much in any of the data that I've been tracking in terms of rookie drafts.
I just find it interesting that people, like for me, this tight end, this rookie tight end class is fascinating because you've got Pitts, who's incredibly overvalued, and then you have the rest. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I would lay the only tight end I would even draft this year based off ADP is Tommy Tremble. He's literally the only one I even want to consider, because Pitts massively overdrafted. Freiermuth massively overdrafted. When was the last time that the Steelers with that coaching staff had a really relevant, prevalent tight end with all those mouths to feed? Do we really think Freiermuth is going to, good player, don't get me wrong, but do we really think he's going to be a great option for what you're going to pay in a rookie? You know, I'd rather buy a lottery ticket to a wide receiver or running back at that range of what he's going to cost. Hunter Long in Miami, same thing. Like, it's the most underwhelming. In fact, no, last year's tight end class was the most underwhelming tight end. But this isn't far behind. If it didn't have Pitts in it, I think you'd just fade it completely. But I just don't want any part of it. But one thing that did get me interested there, you were talking about Trevor Lawrence's ceiling, and I was just having a think, and I've been thinking about it, and I still can't think of the last time a rookie head coach took a first round quarterback and it worked out. Now, I'm sure there is one. I can't think of one, because the last instances I can think of are Wilkes took Rosen in Arizona, and that didn't work out.
Cliff Kingsbury took Kyler Murray.
Yeah, there you go.
Cliff Kingsbury took Kyler
Murray. Yeah, there's always one. That's right. There we go.
That's one.
Because I was trying to think, like, of, you know, and I think Peterson took Wentz. Neither of them are on the team. So, yes, they won the Super Bowl. So it's kind of a gray area.
Somebody else starting a quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly. It's a gray area. But yeah, I you know, the record of it isn't good. And I think that would be that's my cause for thought on. Do you really want to throw in? I've watched Urban Meyer football intently, being a Gator. I am not sure I would want much of an Urban Meyer offense at the prices of what you're paying for the premium for Etienne. For, you know, like you said, you mentioned the cost between Etienne and Williams. Give me Williams all day long. For if they're going to be in that bracket, I just think for me, that's, I just don't trust the coaching staff to deliver the expectations that are going to be on that team.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm the exact opposite. Like, I would take Etienne. And I think one of the things that we're not good at historically has been predicting situation. So I usually caution about saying, hey, you know, I have some pretty strong feelings about Urban Meyer, but I will just say that I don't think that we're particularly good at predicting situation. And so for me, again, if situation is what's causing ETN to fall two rounds, like, yeah, let's do, look, I'll smash that. Like, that's fine. And I think you have to, you know, with Javonte Williams, first round running backs hit about 82% of the time. And it's going up, right? It has gone up in recent years. When I first started tracking it, it was like in the 70s, you know, I think it was like in the lower 70s. And then as we've sort of gotten more data, it's just been going up and up and up. Second round guys, about 55%. So just from a base rates perspective, like you're taking a massive loss by taking Javonte Williams over ETN. You know, it's possible it works out. I think it's negative EV would be my thought. And it's you can't make those bets very often. You can't make the bets that go against, you know, draft pedigree in that way. There's other bets that I think you can make in this class that sort of break that. You know, I typically don't treat guys drafted outside the top 10 at quarterback, like top 10 quarterbacks, because, you know, that's a specific tier. I think there's an argument. Well, I'm including Fields in that this year just because, you know, he's at 11. I don't think the difference between 10 and 11 is all that big. You know, I think Mac Jones, you could sort of argue that he fits in that top tier too. I mean, we could debate that, I think about how you think about that. You know, but generally speaking, I like to follow the rules, and then I make exceptions here and there. But with going Williams over Etienne, that gives me concern, just because historically that's a very dangerous road to go down.
I agree with you. I think it is. I think the things that caused me to go with that is, one, I really love the fact that Denver traded up to get him. And typically, data suggesting that running backs that are traded up, or teams that have traded up to get their running back in the second round, hit a much, much higher rate than the standard. So, you know, that's something that always gives me some real optimism. And I just don't see Melvin Gordon on this team. I just don't see him on his team. And I look at the path to where Javonte Williams can be relevant. You look at the fact they've cleared house there. You look at the fact, the situation, they've traded up to get him. Melvin Gordon's got his off-field issues. Yes, okay, they're kind of cleared up, but, you know, they've got rid of everyone else there. I just think it's looking – I mean, I guess the question is short-term over long-term? See, in redraft, all day long, I would go Williams over Etienne, and I wouldn't hesitate, because I think the situation is – a slightly more cloudy situation in Jacksonville, but I think, yeah, maybe long-term you can definitely make the case in Dynasty for Etienne.
Yeah. But yeah. That's kind of where I'm coming at it from. And that's the lens that I look at it through. And I'll be interested to see what they do with Gordon. I haven't looked at the contract stuff either, in terms of what it would cost to cut him and all that stuff. I thought it's
a significant saving.
Is it? I thought they had a bunch of dead money is what I thought, but I could be wrong on that. I'll have to go back and look at that, but that'd be interesting. I mean, the other one that people think that I'm crazy on, well, at least the analyst community has thought I'm crazy on that. The market seems to agree with me on, which is always nice, is Trey Sermon. And I think in start one, I would get to six at my rookie draft and I would sit there and I would bang on Trey Sermon every chance I could get. I don't do situation. That's not part of typically what I do in terms of evaluating rookies, in terms of, in terms of evaluating rookies or in terms of evaluating players. I think situation's highly, highly in flux and we're not particularly good at it. So it's a rare exception that I look at situation. The last time that I can remember actually, looking at a situation and being like, this is a massive, massive value opportunity is Kamara in New Orleans. I think Sermon is that type of situation. I think Sermon to San Francisco is a Kamara to New Orleans type feel to it. And the upside in that backfield is really high. He's a three down guy. I don't think there's, I like Raheem Mostert. I like Jeff Wilson. Long-term, I don't think they're probably long-term answers. And maybe this is a scenario that, one of the things we tend to see patterns appear, in terms of day two running backs, and it's usually halfway through the season. And that holds up, right? You looked at last year, there was a lot of, even the quote, real good ones, right? Taylor, last year it was up and down in terms of his usage. Remember he got benched for a time for Jordan Wilkins, right? I mean, that was, people were running, running to the fire alarm on that one. But DeAndre Swift, Dobbins, right? All Akers. And it was like week 10 before that happened. You sort of look at that in that mid season range. And whether that's injury attrition for guys in front of them, whether that's just understanding the playbook, whatever it is, that is sort. And I've done research that sort of suggest it's about 8 games that you could expect starter, top 24 projected games out of them, which sort of matches up with what intuitively we see. And so for me, that's awesome because. If Sermon's going to come on, that's right when I want him to come on, right? If Javonte Williams is going to come on, I want him to come on in the second half of the season. So that way he sort of adds me some juice coming down the stretch. I like those situations. So, and I'm willing to be patient. And I think Sermon is just, we talk about the bets you want to make, the high upside ones that aren't that expensive, right? He's the swing there. Who's, I said that there's 6 guys in this class that I think they can make a difference, right? They can truly change the arc. It's Pitts, it's Jamar Chase, and it's Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, and it's Trey Sermon. And the market has, fortunately, and I'm happy about this, the market has largely agreed with me in terms of where they've put him, where initially some of the analyst community was pretty far off of that. I thought that was really fascinating that, we'll see how it turns out, but I was interested, I without knowing it, I was really interested to see that I was in line exactly with where the dynasty community at large was.
Well, I'm hugely appreciative of that last statement, Jordan, because of those 6 players, I own 33% in my last dynasty home league draft. So happy days on that one.
That's what we like to hear. We like those. And it's fun too, because like I will be overbearingly aggressive in terms of getting to where I want to get in terms of, specific situations. Kamara was one where I went up the board. I went down the board. I got to 7 in that class. I sat at 7 and I took him well above ADP at 7. Cause I think he ended up going like 111 was his ultimate ADP that off season. And so I was aggressive to getting to that spot. And I've tried the same thing with Sermon, and I have had very little success. I've got him. He's probably my most rostered rookie, but it's only like 25%. And I'd be fine going 65, 70, 80% if I could. I just haven't been able to get to that spot, which is, I don't know if it's just the class this year, it's harder to do it with or what, but I've been largely unsuccessful. So I'm glad that you're sort of on the board of these guys, because I've had a hard time getting it out.
So we're with Sermon, I think you're right. I think people are maybe down on him more than they should be. Where have you seen, if you're not able to go up and get him to where you feel comfortable moving to, where are you seeing him going then?
That's a great question. So the Analytics Dynasty, we actually track rookie drafts. And so we sort of know where he's going. And so it's pretty helpful in terms of being able to put together a rookie board, being able to put together a rookie draft plan to know where these guys are going. So in Superflex drafts, we have him at a median. We use median instead of average because it tells you basically kind of where your 50-50 shot is. We've got him at 202. And so, yeah, so basically he's going, and it kind of works. There's some tiers that have developed. It's basically Mac Jones is at 111 is his median. Jalen Waddle's at 111. Devonta Smith's at 111. And Trey Sermon's at 202. I would go, the way that I would draft it would be, I wouldn't have a receiver over Sermon besides Jamar Chase. He's the only receiver I'd have over Sermon. And I have Bateman. I basically have Mac Jones, Bateman, and Sermon as a tier. And I would go Mac Jones, Sermon, Bateman in that order, in that tier. I think with Mac Jones, you could pitch me to take the Sermon side of it. I think Sermon's probably got more elite upside maybe than Mac Jones does. Right. But I think I think you'll lose the Mac Jones side of that less often than you lose the Trey Sermon side, and you lose it. You don't take a catastrophic loss, right? Where I'm okay taking a catastrophic loss. Like I'll take the huge upside, high risk bet. I'm fine doing that at running back. But I think with Mac Jones, you've got a lot of outs, right? And historically, I think the odds are that you look at that profile, first round rookie quarterbacks tend to go up in price. I don't know if this year's the right class to say that about, because they're all so expensive, but Mac Jones isn't. And so he's going like eighth round of startup drafts. Like there's plenty of opportunity for him to, you know, if he doesn't just fall on his face and embarrass himself on national television, he's going to go up in price, sort of the way that I look at it. You know, as long as he doesn't Mark Sanchez himself, he's probably not going to lose a ton of value this year. And most likely he'll be up, would sort of be my bet. And so that gives me options to sell him. You know, there's a chance that Sermon never really gets a full opportunity, whatever. And that could turn to dust. Again, I'm willing to make that bet. I just think in terms of when you stack up those bets, that Mac Jones is the one I feel more comfortable with ahead of Sermon. But after that, you know, and you don't need to, usually you don't need to take Sermon ahead of Mac Jones to get Sermon, right? You can take Mac Jones and then take Sermon, but that's really where I've been attacking him. Anywhere after the Mac Jones, you know, 110, 111 range, right in there, I'm fine to going up and getting them and passing over all the wide receivers not named Jamar Chase to do it.
Yeah, I love that. I just I'm in a dynasty rookie draft with a lot of the guys in the Warrior Bowl, and so I so it was interesting. So it started off at the weekend with I got an offer of acquiring Tyreek Hill for Terry McLaurin and a 2022 first, mm-hmm. which intrigued me a lot. Because my team is set up to win now. I moved a lot around the board to get a lot of high value pieces in the startup draft. And then I was like, well, I can't. The only reason I can't do this is that I do have two old QBs as backup. So I have Dak and I have Lamar Jackson as my starters, but then it's Cam Newton, who's not going to have the job after this year, and Big Ben, who's probably not going to have the job after this year. So I'm like, well, I can't do this without, you know, and losing the 2022 first means I can't draft a quarterback next year. So I sat on it. The way the board fell, Mac Jones fell to 111. So we worked in part of that deal, a move for me to trade up to get the 111, because I had 3 second round picks. So I moved up to 111, and I moved up in the second round to move up to the 204, trading off the 205, 206, 207 as part of and the 2022 first. And then I moved up in the fourth round and gave back the I moved the last pick of the fifth round and moved up to the 402. So it was quite a long, complicated draw, but the whole plan was to upgrade wide receiver in the short term, so take Hill over McLaurin, then take Mac Jones, because now I've got Cam, I've got that position locked for going forward. And I moved up in the second round to get Trey Sermon, which is what I got. So now, it, for me, like the board, the way I've shaked the board out, it's cost me to acquire Hill. So it's I got Hill, Sermon, and Mac Jones for McLaurin, 3 seconds, and a first next year.
Yeah, I mean, take the you. I like the league changing bets. that's just my nature. So I, you know, Hill represents one of those. So and so does Sermon. Yeah,
Jordan. We are rapidly approaching the end of this second act of you coming on 5 Yard. Do you have anybody in sort of rounds 2, rounds 3, rounds 4, and even rounds 5 if your rookie drafts are that deep that you're targeting that perhaps people don't necessarily know to target in those rounds?
That's a good question. I found myself, those are typically, to me, running backs and tight end ranges. So Tommy Tremble's one that, you know, further down the line, I think's interesting. So he's one, you know, I constantly try to collect falling pedigree, especially at tight end, because I think that's just a way to give yourself a lot of options. So if you can get a day two guy, round 3, round 4, they're almost always a target in that zone. So those guys, I think McKitty there too, he's has a lesser of a profile, but he's falling to such a range that I'll just sort of plug my nose and just take them, you know, fourth round, a rookie draft type deal. It's kind of do that. The other two guys that I've found myself in on a lot, I don't even necessarily love one of them, but Chuba Hubbard seems like he's got the inside draw on a one injury away role in Carolina. So that's really interesting. In the third round of rookie drafts, I've been sort of prioritizing him in that range. Because there's a lot of, you know, we've seen it with Mike Davis, right? We have seen it. If you can get a shot at having an injury away guy and you have a bunch of them, that can really break your way in a really strong way. And so Chuba Hubbard's one of those guys. The other one that he's going after Chuba Hubbard, but Ramondre Stevenson for the Patriots. And he's really interesting because the profile is like not great in terms of he's a little bit older, but he's big. He can move. Didn't test well, but I think moves better than he tested. And he has two-way ability. You look at some of the advanced stats, one of the best guys in terms of yards after contact in this class, and one of the best guys in terms of yards per route run in this class. So you sort of combine the, hey, he can do something on the ground above baseline, and he can do stuff in the air above baseline. And you sort of look at that situation and say, it looks kind of buried, but I think Sony Michel, you know, there's some rumblings that maybe he doesn't make the team. Again, if Ramondre Stevenson is the one injury away guy in 2022, I'm fine with the cost that I've paid for him. And I think that the biggest beneficiary of Mac Jones, the thing that about the signing of the draft pick of Mac Jones, it's really, really interesting to me, is I think it's going to unlock their running game, because they ran at just by far the most quarterback runs in the red zone last year. I think they ran, you know, it was like 45% of their plays in the red zone, something like that, was quarterback runs, which is just an outrageously high number. That number and a huge amount of their rushes down there were quarterback runs as well. You put Mac Jones in, I don't think that's going to be the case. And you get Damian Harris is one that I really like as a beneficiary. And Ramondre Stevenson, similarly, right? I think that is the writing's kind of been on the wall for Sony Michel for a little bit now. And I think that, yeah, some of the rumors this offseason point to that as well. I think Ramondre Stevenson's one that, you know, if this turns into much more of a Tom Brady like offense, that there's 10, 12, 15 touchdowns on the ground available. You just have to kind of figure out who it is.
Almost like LeGarrette Blount role of a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And he's, you know, people will sort of make that comp because of where he landed and all that stuff. But LeGarrette Blount didn't really catch, right? Ramondre Stevenson can catch, which is really nice. You know, you take, I'm a sucker for big guys that can catch and move. Again, I don't think Ramondre Stevenson tested all that great, but I do think he moves probably better than he tested, and he can catch and run. And so that's a really intoxicating profile to me.
And he's big. You forgot that this guy is an absolute monster.
He's big, very big, very big. And part of the reason why, honestly, part of the reason why Trey Sermon left Oklahoma. So let's not forget sort of the context of which his production came. So, and again, he's a JUCO transfer. He's a little bit older, got all those sorts of concerns. And I get that, but at the cost, again, I look for bets that can way out produce their cost. I mean, you're going to take Tutu Atwell, or you're going to take the guy that could potentially, you know, find himself in line for a touchdown a game type role at some point. Give me the guy who can find himself in a touchdown per game type role.
So before we get to your spicy dynasty hot take for 2021, have you got a brief summary of advice for rookie pick trading and rookie drafts? Because I think there's a definite discrepancy at the moment between rookie pick value and what people should be trading away or trading for with rookie picks. Yet sometimes perhaps people don't quite understand the value of either the players they're trading picks for or the picks value themselves.
That's a good question. I think that there's a dead zone, what I call the zone of death in rookie drafts this year. And it's basically like in the mid second, kind of after the first round, wide receivers go off the board, after the day two running backs go off the board, after Freiermuth. After that, it's a pretty big chasm. So again, I've been in on Hubbard and Stevenson just because I have picks there. But if I can use those picks to sort of vault up the board to target Trey Sermon, for example, I'm doing it. Bateman, I'm doing it. You know, those picks are expendable, at least in my mind this year. That's part of what I really like about how we put together the analytics of Dynasty is it gives you an idea of what the players are worth. Right. So I can love Ramondre Stevenson. About 20% of fourth round running backs have hit for a top 24 seasonal finish. It's not a great number, right? And so when you kind of can jump a tier, when you jump up to third round guys, it's like 45%, right? So that's a massive difference. So you sort of, you know, hey, I can trade two of those picks for a guy that, you know, just doing those sorts of constructions for a guy that's got a much higher hit rate. Those are the types of things that I think you'll be able to really do in an informed way that I think will make you a better dynasty owner generally.
Love that. Love that. Right. I alluded to it. Jordan, do you have a spicy hot dynasty take for 2021?
I have a spicy hot dynasty take for 2021. I'm a lukewarm dynasty take guy. as a general rule, I think that the top 24, the wide receivers that have multiple hits on their resume and the top 24 is top 24 hits that have, you know, that are 28 or younger in that sort of range, that they're generally underpriced. That would be one thing that I would say. I think that Russell Wilson's probably the most underpriced existing veteran. I don't know how hot takey that is. I'll say this in terms of a hot take, like the hottest take I can come up with. I think of the guys that came out last year at the running back position, I think DeAndre Swift has the best chance of producing a running back one overall finish. And I don't think that that's baked into his cost. So he's been one that I've really been targeting in terms of trying to figure out ways to pivot towards him. He's one that I am sky high on his upside.
That's That's yeah, medium spice. I'd say that's not quite up there with the extra hot Nando's we've had of late, Jordan. But it's not lemon and herb cool either. So we'll let you have those few that you've thrown in there. Listen, if people forgot in the period between when you announced it and just now where they can find all your stuff, go ahead, man. Make your case. Where are you available on the internet? Where podcasts? Absolutely everything. Plug yourself.
Hey, is Matt Stafford's got quarterback one upside? How spicy is that hot take? Is that more along the lines of
everyone buys that. I hear that every year. I feel like that's like recycled from last year and the year before and the year before. Now, if you came out and said Jared Goff has up, you know, one QB one upside, I'd be like, yep, straight there, locked in it.
you realize who's? I was looking at some of the odds for the MVP. Stafford is like top five. Which just, I almost tripped over like my toddler when I was walking. I was like, what?
Isn't his odds higher than Tom Brady's?
Yeah, I think so, which is awesome. I have him on a ton of my leagues. I love it. I got to go get more. It's a clear disconnect. I mean, he's going quarterback 15 range. I mean, that's outrageously low for someone with that high of upside in terms of the market. That's a really interesting one. So that would be another one. I think it's a little hotter, I guess. Analyticsdynasty.com. I actually did a 10% off the books, so you can get the 2021 edition or you can do the bundle. I got 10% off of them. Use the coupon code RUSH go over there at Analytics Dynasty. Use the coupon code RUSH to get 10% off the books. Yes, and go ahead, check them out. Again, if you want to subscribe to the site, the 2021 edition is included with your membership with the year-long membership to the site. So go ahead, sign up over there. We got a really awesome community. It's actually an international community too. We have people from, I've got people in Europe. I've got people in South America. We've got folks in Australia too. So we're sort of racking up a lot of Canadian folks as well. So folks from all over. So we'd love to have, we'd love to have some people from across the pond join us in our group meet chat. It always keeps it interesting because you can tell, you know, when people are awake about when the messages are coming in, and you know, it'll be someone will come in and there'll be like 14 hours difference, and they'll just have like, you know, 7-8 likes right in a row, and I'm like, he just woke up. So come on, join us over at Analytics of Dynasty and you know, get into some more dynasty startups, and this is the best time of year to be studying some theory and thinking about big picture dynasty questions. So yeah, analyticsdynasty.com. And if you have any questions, go ahead, hit me up on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty. My DMs are always open.
Love that. Make sure you use that discount code. See, that's a real honor. We appreciate you for that. So we'll make sure we put the details in the show notes. Take advantage of it. Honestly, you're just going to be a better player. It's a great investment. As you say, it is an investment. So make sure you go ahead and download those and check out everything Jordan's doing.
Absolutely. Lee Murph mentioned it earlier that we're going to put the last show we did with Jordan in the show notes. Lee's put it into the Twitter thread. So if you are watching on Twitter or you want to go check it out, it's there in this thread. We'll also put it into the show notes. Jordan, listen, man, appreciate your time. Loved having you back on. We won't take as long to have you back next time, that's for sure. So yeah.
You guys, anytime. I like this. This is a perfect time too. You guys like, hey, you guys want to do evening? I'll be like, yeah, it's mid-afternoon here. Perfect. This is awesome. So anytime you guys want, let me know. I'll be glad to come back on.
Well, we will definitely hit you up real soon. Murph, pleasure as always, big man. Rush Nation, don't forget to head over to the website to get your PDF version of the 2021 playbook or Amazon. It is there as a paperback form right now. Go get it. If you do buy it and you do enjoy it, we would love a little 5-star review on Amazon just to keep us up there in the polls. But Rush Nation, until next time, don't forget, as always, keep rushing.